I'm Dr. Tyler Webster. I'm one of the non-invasive cardiologists at the Valley Medical Group at Valley Hospital in Ridgewood, New Jersey.
Dr. Webster, I can't even remember why I started taking a low-dose aspirin. I just remember that I was going to my family doctor, and he has us bring all of our meds and all of our supplements and everything in a bag to every visit. This one time I did, and he looked at this low-dose Bayer aspirin, and he said, why are you taking this? And I said, I don't remember. He said, well, don't do that anymore. So what is the current recommendation about baby aspirin?
You know, aspirin's been around for a very long time, and there are very clear indications as to when aspirin is incredibly beneficial. So if a patient has already had a heart attack or they've had a specific kind of stroke, these are patients where we sort of pretty easily recommend a daily aspirin for really the long term, because the data are very strong about what we call secondary prevention aspirin, meaning patients who have already had an event such as a heart attack. The study showed these patients reap a lot of benefit from continuing being on aspirin, generally that low dose 81 milligrams. The big question is sort of for patients that have not had an event before, not had a heart attack or not had a stroke, just the patient who's coming in interested in wondering if they're a patient that should take an aspirin on a daily basis. And that's a little bit more of a difficult question to answer, just because the studies have not been as strong for patients for this primary prevention, meaning trying to prevent any heart attack or any stroke to begin with. Generally, you know, these days we've sort of narrowed the focus down to it not being sort of everyone that comes in and who's interested. Generally, it's patients with high risk for coronary artery disease or heart disease. So these are your patients with, you know, elevated blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, and smoking, and especially patients who have a considerable combination of those risk factors. Generally, between the ages of 40 and 70, these are the patients that we tend to recommend this primary prevention aspirin with the purpose of preventing their first event of heart attack or specific kind of stroke.
Okay. What about obesity?
So generally not. So okay. Obesity, you know, carries with it metabolic syndrome, which oftentimes has issues with cholesterol management as well as diabetes. So generally it's not the obesity, but it's the risk factors that tend to develop along with obesity that makes us push a physician to recommend a baby aspirin.
How do you think this got into the American belief system? And does it frustrate you as a cardiologist?
Yeah, I think it's because as the data has come through over decades of how good it is in terms of, you know, actually while a patient is having a heart attack, or how good it is in preventing heart attacks in the future for those who've already had them, I think it makes sense for something as available as aspirin over the counter to be something that could help combat it, you know, for this very specific reason to try to prevent first event in people. But unfortunately, you know, the data just have not been as strong, and there's been a lot of conflicting data. So what we would maybe expect for it to be just as beneficial for this role, it just really hasn't. So it doesn't frustrate me because, as you mentioned, it's been around for a long time, and oftentimes patients come to me for the first time already on it, and the conversation has to be more geared towards whether or not the risk or the benefit outweighs the risk, rather, to continue with.
Yeah. If you take a daily aspirin and you really don't, quote unquote, need it, it can cause internal bleeding, we are hearing. Is that likely, or I guess it's over time, could something like that develop? And what would happen if a person who doesn't need it is taking it regularly?
Just by nature of the mechanism of aspirin, you know, it works in the antithrombotic system, basically, you know, working against platelets. So it does increase risk of bleeding. It also can kind of cause irritation to the lining of the stomach. So patients, especially those who are high risk of bleeding to begin with, maybe they've had a bleeding in their GI tract or something in the past. These are patients that are specific high risk for developing bleeding on aspirin. So it's generally rare for the general population to have a lot of bleeding events. But especially in patients specifically over 70 or patients who've had bleeding in the past, these are the patients that we're more concerned about when they take aspirin in patients that maybe we would not recommend it.
So it seems that age cutoff of 70 is important. Why is that? Do you see different things happening at that point in life?
A lot of the data that we see, that's sort of the cutoff to where we see the benefit. And also the College of Cardiology and the American Heart Association also agree that 70 is probably the limit to where patients who are taking this for primary prevention, meaning they've never had a heart attack before, probably the risk would outweigh the benefit at that point. So generally around 70 is when I begin to have the conversation that maybe the risk would outweigh the benefit.
Interesting. Okay. And what about taking aspirin in general for a headache or something like that? Should it also be used sparingly? And what about those people who insist on popping an extra strength pill? Can that be harmful?
So I think it's reasonable as a painkiller or pain management if it's used kind of according to the instructions that you would get it over the counter, because actually for like thousands of years, this has been used as an analgesic medication. So I think it's reasonable, especially for patients who've had benefit from it in the past, as long as they use it as directed. But again, I always caution any of my patients that have a high risk of bleeding or have had a bleeding event in the past that they may want to choose an alternative medication for pain management aside from aspirin, because aspirin has that extra risk of bleeding. But I don't think it's unreasonable because, again, it has been proven over time to have benefits in pain management.
What about other supplements as a cardiologist, the effect on the heart? For example, vitamin D, is that important for heart health?
So vitamin D is obviously helpful sort of in many ways in terms of the metabolic system. However, in terms of prevention, which is kind of what we focus on, the prevention of cardiovascular disease, stroke, it's never really shown to have strong evidence as a supplement to take for that specific goal. You know, it's been proven to have a lot of benefits in sort of other realms, but there's no strong evidence to support it in sort of the cardiovascular realm.
And I have to ask you about vitamin K. That seems to be gaining in stature lately. Any thoughts on vitamin K?
In general, the only time vitamin K sort of ever comes up in the cardiology office is patients that are on warfarin or blood thinners, where a lot of vitamin K in the diet can change the levels and how we provide blood thinning in those patients. But aside from that, generally not a recommendation for or against that I give in my office.
Are you seeing a lot of COVID effects on the heart?
Yes. I'm seeing a lot of patients that are coming in with continued shortness of breath, chest pain, and palpitations, and actually elevated heart rates over time. I've seen a good amount of those patients, and they could be months even after their initial COVID diagnosis. Generally, we do a lot of testing on these patients because there have been some studies and some case studies which have shown that patients can develop very serious cardiovascular events, such as inflammation of the heart, like myocarditis. Luckily, the majority of patients that I've seen who've been having, you know, these symptoms of chest pain or shortness of breath or palpitations, generally their workup and their studies have been negative. So we kind of say they're part of this long-haul syndrome, meaning that they have these symptoms that slowly get better over time. So patients are definitely presenting with cardiovascular complaints that would obviously concern a cardiologist for, you know, something wrong with the heart. But in general, although the studies have been showing us that there are patients that do have significant events from COVID, in general, in the outpatient setting, most of that testing is been normal.
And what about from the vaccine? Is it too early to say anything about that?
I would say probably a little too early. I haven't really seen any data that has changed my practice at this point in terms of that question.
Mm-hmm. You still think that better to take the vaccine than not?
Of course, any therapy that a physician or a practitioner provides is always going to have risks and benefits attached to it. But I think in general, your risk of complications from the actual COVID infection far outweighs the risk of a vaccine. So we'd still recommend the vaccine to the general public.
But any advice on heart health?
Yeah, so I think specifically about aspirin, you know, I think that if a patient is ever considering taking an aspirin on a daily basis, I think this is a confusing topic. And I think it's very important for that patient to consult either their primary care physician, their cardiologist, or their doctor who manages the diabetes and really have a one-on-one discussion about it, because there are risks, there are benefits. And I do believe there is a small subgroup of patients that do benefit from aspirin for primary prevention, but I do think it warrants a discussion about the patient's risk factors and also the risks of taking aspirin on a daily basis. So if I had sort of one bit of advice, I would say if you're considering taking aspirin for primary prevention, instead of sort of starting it on your own, I would definitely